Welcome to What in God's Name. He's Chris Owen.
And she is Shayna Appel.
You have tuned into the podcast that looks at contemporary issues through the lenses of philosophy, psychology, and theology, based on an assumption that, and, well, an assumption and some lived experience, right? That the conversation currently dominating the public square is one that is grounded solely in politics and economics. And we don't believe either of those conversations is enough to get us to the place of human flourishing.
We're on a mission to recast the stories of our shared public life together as moral stories, and maybe even sometimes as religious stories. And I mean religious in that sense very broadly and generously, as a way of addressing fundamental questions such as who is the human being within the cosmos? Religious stories understood that broadly. What do you think of that, Shayna? I just thought of this phrase, we're on a mission to recast the stories of our shared public life together as moral stories. Do you think that's what we're doing?
I do, absolutely.
I'm really glad you think that, because I didn't want to disagree this early.
And just for our listeners, like, that was totally not set up. I had no idea who was going to say that. But no, I do. I like that. Recasting the stories.
We are pushing back against programmatic secularists who think that religion has nothing to say and, in fact, should be banished from public conversations, that religion really is just a private thing and best silenced, really, in terms of public conversations. To them, we say, no, there is much richness in our theological traditions to offer our public life, not just private life, but public life, communal life together. We're also pushing back against the quasi-theocrats who are more than delighted to have religion in public conversations as long as it's theirs. As long as it's theirs.
And so theirs alone.
To them, we say no. In the particular genius, the particular gift of pluralism within the United States, we have to have more voices and we have to work together and listen. And it's all a bunch of hard work, for sure.
So today we're continuing with a theme that we launched last week, which is democracy. And again, looking at democracy through the lenses of theology, psychology, philosophy, trying to get beyond the binaries. Chris, you had some thoughts to share with us as we open up this morning. Chris is just going to shuffle his paperwork until he finds his brain, which apparently is scribbled all over. Scott, you got to see the way this guy takes notes. Okay. Most of us take notes on lined paper. We use the lines. Chris turns the paper into the landscape view and then jots notes all over the place, which I think is great insight into his creative genius. They give you ruled paper, write the other way. Perfect.
So as Shayna says, we are doing this series on democracy. Shayna, what I wanted to share with you to get our show going today, connecting today with last week when you quoted Terry Tempest Williams in Parker Palmer's book, and I'm going to just do this quote again because okay. I think it's worth repeating. The human heart, is what I've written down, is the first home of democracy. That's mm-hmm. accurate, right? Mm-hmm. This is Terry Tempest Williams talking about democracy. The human heart is the first home of democracy. It's where we embrace our questions. Can we be equitable? Can we be generous? Can we listen with our whole beings, not just with our minds? Can we offer our attention rather than our opinions? And do we have enough resolve in our hearts to act courageously, relentlessly, without giving up ever, trusting our fellow citizens to join with us in our determined pursuit of a living democracy? I thought about this, and I noticed that Terry Tempest Williams was asking a lot of questions mm-hmm. in this statement. Can we be equitable? Can we listen? Do we have enough resolve? Can we trust our fellow citizens to join with us in our determined pursuit of a living democracy? And you know what? I said no.
You did.
Like, We don't.
But you were focusing on the latter half of that, weren't you? Can we trust our fellow citizens enough to apply themselves to this endeavor?
Can we be equitable? Can we be generous? Can we listen with our whole beings and not with just with our minds? I'm not so sure we can. So I'm just going to lift this up as a piece of tension, because part of a theological reflection on democracy, I think, has to take into account whether, I mean, that fundamental question, is the human being good enough? It takes, this is a moral, I mean, like, you have to have some moral integrity. There's moral practices involved in this. You have to discipline yourself in a certain way to be able to act. I'm not sure human beings have it.
I would agree with you. I would agree with you. The vast majority of human beings do not. And there are some that do. But the vast majority of human beings do not. Still, the question is that something we can reach for? Are human beings capable of it? Because if we're not, then, there goes any hope. I mean, there goes, really, for me, there goes all hope. And right now, I think a lot of people are feeling that sense of hopelessness because we are seeing so many of our fellow Americans going in a direction that is antithetical to what Terry lifts up.
So can we, you and I, making this show, can we just leave that as an unresolved tension at the moment? And maybe come back, and not maybe, but come back. I think we'll come
let me
back
ask you,
to this.
Let me ask you a question.
You don't want to leave it as an unresolved tension.
But let me ask you a question. If that is unresolved, why are we doing the show?
If life is unresolved, like, why are we living? Because that's how your question comes to me. Like,
no, it's literally, why are we doing the show? I mean, the whole point of this show is to cultivate that holy curiosity in folks, to cultivate those open hearts, the listening, the shining light, the going deep. That is the whole premise of our show, I feel like, is, in its own way, church, you know, helping people to become the best that they can become, to throw a line out there into, this septic pool of, democracy, of politics and economics, basically, and say, hey, come on up where the air is a little bit fresher, and let's see if we can do this thing together. So I feel like, sort of without the hope that human beings are capable of that, if human beings are in fact unable to do that, that would sort of eliminate all hope for me, I guess.
And therefore our show would be
a folly at best.
Yeah. So I would clarify my position as being, here I'm going to go theological, unredeemed humanity can't do that.
Yes. And on that we'll agree. Unredeemed humanity cannot. And it is always up to those who are redeemed, or who are in the process of being, at least who are on that train, who understand that they can always be a better person. They can always improve and open their hearts to more generosity, to more love, to more attention giving, to that holy curiosity, that we can always give ourselves more to that and continue to grow. It's up to the redeemed.
And then the deeper conversation between you and me on that point is, where does redemption come from? What is the source of it? And if you're going to tell me that that is human generated, like, if I just try harder, I could be a better, all of the things that Terry Tempest Williams talks about. I could be more generous if I just try harder. I can listen with my whole being if I just try harder. If it's the source of my redemption is me, then I think we're sunk.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there is a component of redemption that requires us to open ourselves to the mystery, however we understand that mystery. Because the mystery is where the thing bigger than us dwells. And without the thing bigger than ourselves, I don't feel that we can be redeemed. We end up awash in just an endless sea of individualism, of toxic individualism. And God knows we've talked about that on the show. So are we resolved enough to...
Well, since you've gone this way, there is another rejoinder that I would add, which is when I hear these words from Terry Tempest Williams and I think about redeemed humanity versus unredeemed in its ability to be able to do these things, I think my conclusion is that faith communities, the possibility, certainly in many instances, not the reality, but the possibility to actually pull this off, this kind of democracy, this kind of trust, this kind of listening, the possibility exists not in broad, wide society today, not happening, but possible in faith communities. And if I want to see hope and the possibility of a rejuvenated democracy, this is where I see the gift of faith communities, but not as they exist right now, because they're as broken as everything else.
Yeah, I think anywhere you have a smaller gathering of people together who would not otherwise come together. So we could look at institutions of higher education, for example, where, you know, people come from all over the world and now they're all, you know, they're all badgers now out there at University of Wisconsin, or hamsters at, you know, the frogs at Hampshire College, or any place where people of different backgrounds come together and are in living community for a time holds that potential, but that potential is rarely actualized. The whole conversation that we're having about, you know, whether human beings are good enough to actually pull this off is interesting, because we were going to talk about Alexis de Tocqueville, and I think that was Tocqueville's fundamental question. I think he questioned both the system of democracy and the nature of humanity enough to say, wow, is this new world order something? It's fascinating and it's magnificent, but can it survive? Will it survive? For our listeners who don't, who might not have ever heard of Tocqueville or heard of Tocqueville, but really aren't familiar with his work, the seminal work that is quoted most often is a book called Democracy in America. He arrived in America in May of 1831 and left in February of 1832. So he's only here for 9 months. And he wrote this book called Democracy in America, which has been kicking about for, you know, centuries now, and still, I think, lifts up some powerful questions and offers us some radical insights into this political system that we live in.
I love how you made that segue. That was just elegant.
Thank you, Chris. The first part of the book, he gives a brief description of the New World, sort of the physical dimensions, the origin of Anglo-Americans, and of what he saw as our most striking characteristic, which was democracy and the appearance of a sovereignty of the people. Now, of course, in order for him to see that, he had to look right past and over the institution of slavery, which was in, you know, full-blown whatever back then, which he did. So if you look past slavery, then, you know, what he sees as democracy's most striking feature is this, you know, holding the human being as sovereign. So about the second part of the book, the person who wrote the introduction to the version I'm reading, which is the Mentor edition, he writes, Richard Hefner writes, "For above all else, Tocqueville's concern is for the development and the survival of both freedom and democracy." So his ultimate concern is freedom and democracy. He's looking at early American democracy, and he's wondering if these two things, freedom and democracy, can find a balance.
Tocqueville's concern, if I understand it, Shana, correct me if I'm wrong, was that too much freedom. Democracy relies on freedom and liberty as its engine to work, and a sense of equality. It's not an aristocracy with lots of levels, but democracy is about this leveling of the playing field. And so related to that is the concept of individual liberty and freedom. But if there's too much liberty and freedom, then the centrifugal force of individualism takes sway, and then society is in trouble. Is that your understanding of what Tocqueville was on
about? That is both my understanding of what Tocqueville was writing about, and it is my understanding of where we are in America today. That his prophecy was cast forth in 1834, 1835, has absolutely come home to roost today, I think, is what makes his work as significant today as it was when it was written.
And what he saw, again, my understanding, I'm not a Tocqueville scholar, but my understanding of his observation was that, at least in that time in the 1800s, religion was a centripetal force. So if you had too much freedom, if the nature of democracy is individualism, then the power of religion, again, Tocqueville's view, was to pull that individualism back in, give it a container, give it a shape, that there is a higher power beyond the individual. Like, if individualism, in Tocqueville's view, runs amok.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I was going to say, and it has.
A-M-O-K, amok. Yeah. Then society will fall apart. And I'm going to offer this quote, which I read to you earlier, but I share with our listeners now. Religion is much more necessary in the Republic and in democratic republics more than in all others. Religion is much more necessary in democratic republics. How could society, he says, fail to perish if, while the political bond grows loose, the moral bond does not become tighter?
Well,
which is his little 19th century way of saying democracy, if left to its own devices, loosens political bonds because of the individualism that it engenders. Mm-hmm. And religion then is this force that comes in and has a tightening, a binding influence.
That's a really salient, I think, distillation of exactly what he's saying and what we're experiencing. Again, you know, what we're experiencing right now. You use the word religion, and I consider myself a religious person. For those of our listeners who do not, think of it in terms of, you know, what is the above the individual? What is there? What is that? What is that mystery that binds us all together? When we allow ourselves to lean into the mystery, and this is the realm that you talk about in religious terms, and I'm sort of maybe talking about in somewhat more secular terms, you know, for the sake of some of our listeners, that it is the willingness to lean into the something bigger than us, or to concede in one's heart and one's mind that there is something bigger than us to which we are accountable. You know, if that is the planet, and God knows we've seen the consequences of not honoring and taking care of that, right? If it is just the interconnectedness of all human beings, I think that's a little short-sighted, but that might get us a little closer. The problem is we've seen the breakdown of religion and within religion. At the same time that we're seeing the loosening bonds of democracy, we end up in this kettle of really foul-tasting soup that we're in right now.
What do you think of our prospects going forward? Does Tocqueville's answer, is that our answer today? That is, more religion and or, you know, the higher thing, as you've just outlined?
I think he's nailed it. I mean, I think he was successful at prophesying where we would be right now.
Yeah, right.
But I'm not sure this is certainly not the forever and always. I think we are at an absolute tipping point, and we're going to have to go one way or the other. We're going to have to go. We will either slip into, you know, despotism, or there's going to be some sort of a radical rebirth. We know that the moral arc of the universe is long, right? But it always bends towards justice. So based on history, I am hopeful that it will do that again. While I'm also mindful that too is a card we can't play too many times. We can't just kind of sit idly by hoping that arc is going to bend. We have to be part of bending it. But so really the question is, do we have enough people with the will to bend the arc? I don't know. What do you think?
I am bearish on the future of democracy. I am bearish because of, well, I point to, or I would ask you to consider and be interested in your rejoinder to this, but I think of Moses and the Israelites. He's led them out of Egypt into a place of, out of bondage, into a place of freedom.
And radical discomfort.
And radical discomfort. And there are times when the people say, Moses, why did you lead us out into this freedom? Slavery was a secure place. And I raise that story as part of my illustration of my bearishness on democracy. And it brings us back to the Terry Tempest Williams quotation, which is, to have the freedom is a burden. It requires a lot of work to be self-governing. And it takes a lot of faith and trust in other people. And from my point of view, it takes faith and trust in God. So, man, I just, human beings cannot bear very much freedom. I think there's a large and strong tendency to want to give it back.
Well, it's so true, because if you extend the Moses narrative, people were fleeing slavery in order to theoretically be free and build up this new egalitarian society, right? Which they do, and they do well for a while, until they look around and everybody else has a king, and they're getting tired of how much work is involved in this free egalitarian society, and they eventually elect a king, because God's just easier sometimes to have somebody else do the work. And over time, of course, that goes very badly. So you raise an interesting point. I remember studying conflict in one of those many classes in seminary, and I can't remember who the theorist was, but, they said conflict is a management issue. Like, it's always there, and it, sometimes is going to be louder and sometimes less loud, but it's always there. And basically the best you can do is manage it. So, it could be that democracy and freedom are on two sides of a scale that need to be brought into balance by something bigger than both. And that thing that's bigger than both is something that, we cannot get humanity to agree on. We will not get all of humanity to agree on. So it is going to be an ongoing management issue.
Even if humanity can't agree on what it is, or let's just bring it down to America in the pluralism that we exist in, which makes it even harder to agree on what that larger power might be. Even if we can't agree, I think part of what our gift is as a show and as a spirit, as a part of our project, is to have the conversation, is to say that's important and we have to talk about it.
It is the sine qua non, is that the way they say it in Latin? The essential something that cannot be done without, because without it, even Alexis de Tocqueville saw back in 1835 that this experiment could not and would not survive without it. And so there we are.
Yeah. Or otherwise.
Full circle.
Otherwise, you brought it
home
beautifully.
It is always amazing to me when we stick a landing on this show based on.
Be curious, Shana.
Go deep, Chris.
And shine light. Our show today is brought to you by our generous donors on Patreon. You can join our generous donors on Patreon by going to patreon.com/whatingodsname. Brandon, our associate producer for Outreach, says, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We have to play the algorithm game, and the algorithm game doesn't come to us unless we have some reviews on there. So please, please take a moment. Leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. Like us on Facebook at What in Gods. And indeed, of course, you can check us out on our soon-to-be-updated website, whatingods.com, Shana, which is
WHATINGODS.
Next week, we continue our conversation on democracy. Great to be with you, Shana.
It is always great to be with you, Chris.